Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into Chit Chat Cafe Live. This show airs every Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle @artist_first. Now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark, Lisa and Nancy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark. This is Lisa, your host from New Jersey. We're airing live from Artist First. We have a great show for you tonight. First guest is going to be Allison Arngrim, and Matt, and then we're going to have Maggie Hal, can't talk tonight. So grab your martini, flip it to something really comfortable, put your best high heels on, and stay for the next hour and chat with us. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Lisa. You know, real quickly, I have to give a little shout-out. We have a listener tonight because they want to hear Allison from Germany. Her name is Barb Schneider, and her friend Olivia Seigel. So I thought, how exciting, all the way from Germany, that they're excited to hear Allison talk tonight.
Oh, my God. Did we get Barb hooked up? I'm so excited.
Yeah. Do you know Barb?
Oh, yeah. See, I have all these fans and friends all over the world now. I have people who I've now met on Twitter and Facebook.
Right.
And I mean, if they can tune in via the Internet on France, you've got half of France on the line. And indeed, Barb was just saying on Twitter, I'm in Germany. I don't think I can listen to the show. So she checked, and I guess somebody said, yeah, you can.
Worldwide. Yeah. Olivia Seigel is the one who helped her, and I tweeted to the girls saying,
great,
we're going to give a shout-out to you.
Excellent! Oh, yeah, they are so nice. I meet the nicest people. I have friends all over the world now.
Isn't that cool? Isn't that the best?
And we're really honored to, we're in 135 nations.
Well, there you go. Well, then indeed, I have to say hi to everybody, my fans in Argentina, my fans in France, and Barb in Germany, and all of her friends. Hi!
Well, isn't this
hi,
a small world? Isn't it funny? Yeah. And, you know, the beautiful thing about being on Artist First, we're live right now, but whoever can't listen or whoever wants to listen again, the archives will be available to download in the next couple days, and so everyone can enjoy this chat.
Yep.
Excellent, excellent. We love that.
Oh, and a big shout-out to all of our military and their families serving abroad as well. They were excited to hear this talk tonight, too.
Oh, good, good, good. So everybody gets to enjoy this. Oh, this is great. See, this is what I love, you know? Thank God for the Internet. My God, we can all talk to everybody now.
Well, you know, Lisa, I can't help it. We have to get right into this.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, without further ado, for everyone who's wondering, forgive us. We know exactly who we're talking to, and we are honored, I cannot believe it, and we're excited and proud to have Allison Arngrim, who starred as Nellie Olson for 7 years on the iconic TV series Little House on the Prairie. She is also the author of Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you. I know we're sitting here chatting like you've known me all my life.
I know. I can't believe it. I tell you what, I watched every episode and have watched every rerun. Still to this day, if I see it on, that's what's on TV for me. I just grew up loving it.
Are you a bonnet head? This is what we call real diehard Prairie fans.
Yes.
We call them like Trekkies, we have Houseies, and bonnet heads.
I currently live in Minnesota, and I've been to Walnut Grove, and I've been to all the sites around here.
Oh, you've been to such, you know, there's, you'll have to get there's a book called The Wilder Life about a woman who actually made this whole, like, pilgrimage to all of the sites. It's freaking hilarious.
Look for that.
Yeah, that sounds like you.
Yeah, I just love it. And it was such a fun thing. Our family would gather, and we'd all watch it and then discuss it. And then we just loved it all. So I just had to tell that. So, as I said, I watched every episode, and you kept us all surprised by your devious character, Nellie Olson.
Thank you.
How did you get that role?
Well, you know, it was so funny because when they were casting the show, they had everyone in. I actually read for the role of Laura and for the role of Mary. I think they saw everyone. It was sort of like the search for Scarlett O'Hara for 8-year-olds. And I came right from Lorraine. I didn't get either of those, and I was kind of glad I didn't. And then when they called me Cirilla's Nelly, I mean, my first thought was, well, how many people are on this silly show? I hadn't read the books. I was one of those kids who never read the books. I can't believe it. I mean, because now I've read the books, and they're fabulous. I've read them over and over. Hadn't read Little House books, had no idea who Nellie Olson was. I go in, I get the signs, my father and I are sitting there, and I said to my father, Dad, this girl's a total bitch. And he said, well, read it to me. Well, I read it to him, and he said, don't touch a thing. You go in, you read it exactly like that. And you know I did, and they hired me on the spot.
Oh, that's amazing. And, you know, speaking of your dad,
yes.
You know, as we've read, he was not just a regular dad. He was a talent manager for Liberace and other people. Both of your parents were actors, is that correct?
Exactly. My father was a manager. He managed Liberace. He was at Seymour Heller & Associates. And, oh, man, he worked for everybody at one point, Debbie Reynolds, Susan Anton, all these people. But he was assigned as the West Coast vice president in charge of Liberace. And so we lived in the Hollywood Hills down the street from Liberace, keep an eye on the guy. And my father would go to his shows all the time, make sure everything was in order. And this meant I got to go and see Liberace's shows when I was 8 years old, which was completely hysterical. He really was amazing. But, you know, my parents sitting there trying to tell me, now don't say anything because no one must know that Liberace is gay.
Oh.
I was like, I hate to break this to you. I'm 8. I know he's gay, really.
So, I loved reading about your gorgeous curls. Did I read that at first it was your hair that took hours to curl and a ton of Aquanet?
Oh, it was awful. Because, I mean, here I was, all of 12, and I have really straight hair. I mean, if you've seen my current pictures, I have totally short hair. It just does not curl.
So gorgeous, by the way.
Thank you. I got the show, and I was literally 12 years old sleeping in curlers and coming into work 4 or 5 in the morning and having them take the curling irons, I mean, trying to get my hair to curl. And it was just awful, and it would take forever. And then it wouldn't stay because we're out in Simi Valley here in California where it's the heat and the humidity and the hair just go. And so finally, several months in, they said, that's it, we're making a wig. And they went and they had the wig maker come in, and they made it look fantastic. I mean, I could go down a hill in a wheelchair, be in a mud fight, and my hair stayed perfect. Most uncomfortable thing I've ever had on my head. Absolutely excruciating. But it looked fabulous.
Oh, I also love in your book, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, by the way. How did you think of that title? Well, of course, that was easy.
I admit I owe a great debt to my friend Howie Green out in Boston, Howie Green Design, who put together my website years ago, and he named it the official Allison Argram Confessions of a Prairie Bitch Nellie Olson website.
Aww. Oh,
you're so crazy. I said, but that's the best title. And then I started doing my one-woman show. You know, I'd done stand-up for years, but in 2002, I started doing this whole one-woman show and telling all these true stories. So, well, I guess we'll call it Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. And it just took off, and when I went to do the book, I said, well, the book's called Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, and the publisher said, best title we've heard all week. You're in.
I love it. And we have a link to your website.
Oh, yes.
And HarperCollins.
That's
on
so
our Chit Chat Cafe Live website so everyone can find you. I was really intrigued in reading Confessions of a Prairie Bitch that you wrote that you and Melissa Gilbert, who played Laura Ingalls, were best friends.
Exactly. I mean, this is what's so crazy. When you play mortal enemies on TV, it actually can lead to a great friendship because you sort of get all the hostilities out in the open, you know? And
we
knew nobody was going to get hurt. We were really friends. So when we'd have the fight scene, we'd choreograph our own fight scenes, and we were fine, you know?
Funny. I loved reading in the book, too, your story when you and your dad showed up at a party.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody thought it was just going to be the star, you know, Michael Landon, at this party. Who would have ever suspected Nellie Olson?
And right. Well, you know.
You had the Neiman Marcus dress. And your dad in the tux, and you end up having a picture taken with Michael Landon.
And the look on his face. Well, because, you know, it was the show had just started. So nobody was famous yet from the show except for Michael. Because he'd just come off Bonanza. So
right. When
they had the big network party, they only had the top stars of the show. So he was the only one invited. But my father knew somebody who knew somebody, and he said, we're going to that party. And we went in my good dress and his $2 tuxedo. And that he got at the rummage sale, and we got at his party, and oh, Michael nearly fell over when he saw us. Like, how did you two get in here?
Oh, my gosh. That was funny. So did you just really have a good time playing Nellie?
I did. I mean, it is hard to be a kid actor, and it's hard to be on a show. It's a lot of work, but I was really lucky in that getting that part. I think if I'd had to play somebody else, it might have been exhausting. I might not have liked it as much because I wouldn't have had such an outlet for all these emotions. It was just fantastic. You know, when you're a teenager and you're just sick of everybody, but you have to be nice all day at school and you have to be nice to everybody. Here I played someone who could just tell everybody off all the time. It was really relaxing, I have to admit. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I personally remember it like it was yesterday. When you first appeared on the show, I think the episode, through my research, was called Country Girls.
Yes.
But what I remember, I can even hear the inflection in your voice as you said your first words, Country Girls. Well, could you do it for us?
That's what's scary is I still sound like that. Country Girl.
There you go. I love it.
And it's alarming. It's so creepy. I mean, well, that's the thing. When Laura goes home and starts freaking out and telling everybody, she called us country girls, and her parents are completely perplexed and say, but you are country girls. How is country girls an insult? You're girls. You live in the... What's the big deal? And she says, oh, Ma, it wasn't what she said. It was the way she said it.
Oh,
and I was like,
yes.
The way I said everything that came out of my mouth just sounded like the most vicious thing ever. I'm kind of proud of that, I admit.
Yeah. Well, I also love that you describe that Nellie Olson transformed you from a shy, abused little girl, afraid of her own shadow, to a world travel and political activist.
Right? It's very true. I mean, I was very shy. That's the funny thing. I was the shy kid at school. I was the kid who got beat up by bullies. I was small for my age. I was the one who was always picked on. I had been abused at home, abused at school. It just, things were rough. And then I get this part of this girl who everyone's terrified of. And it's like those animals you hear about who change their coloring to look like a more dangerous animal in the wild,
right,
to scare their predators. It was like that. Here I was. People were suddenly intimidated by me. I still find it terribly funny. I'll meet new people, and they're very intimidated. And kind of, as they sort of step back, they're very frightened to meet me because, well, she was Nellie Olson. What's she going to be like? And, of course, they just fall apart when they're involved. Really? No, I'm a nice person. But it's great because if I go into a group of people and I'm a little nervous or shy, I remember that they're all completely petrified of me, and it makes it much easier.
Yeah, that's funny. It was fun to read what you wrote about the lady at the state fair.
Okay.
Tell us about
Seriously?
That.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
So here I am. It's, you know, the L.A. County Fair. They set up an autograph thing. They had a bunch of celebrities. It was great, and we're in this tent, and I've got all my nice 8x10s Nellie Olson pictures. And all these people are coming in and getting their autographs, having a great time. This woman walks in. She does not say hello. She doesn't speak to me. She just walks up, and she sees me. She looks at the pictures, realizes it's me, and stares at me. She doesn't say hello, not good morning, doesn't ask me if it's really me, just looks at me, gets this violent look on her face, and says, I forgive you, and walks out of the room. And my husband was there at the time. He was cracking up. He said, okay, now that's got to be it. I have seen everything now. You've just been, you know, absolved of everything at the L.A. County Fair. And she was serious. This woman had been holding this in for like 30 years. She was so angry from watching the show that her first reaction to see me was just, I forgive you, and stomp out of there.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, the idea that this is a grown woman. This one, I wanted to say, it was a TV show, lady. Really, calm down.
Oh, when all your years, it was 7 seasons, correct?
Yes, it was only for 7 years. I mean, Little House ran a total of 9 years. The last 2 years, it became Little House, A New Beginning. But then I was on it for 7 years. I started the show, I just turned 12, and I was 19 by the time I left. I mean, that's why Nellie eventually got married. I had the hotel. I had twins. It was awesome.
Oh, and I love that, too. I loved when you wrote in your book, at the end of season 6, Michael Landon came into your dressing room and said, you're getting married.
Right? And I thought, who's going to marry Nellie Olson? I was hooked. I was like, wait a minute. We just had all these episodes where a guy would come into town. There'd be some boy, and Nellie and Laura would fight over them. And Nellie was always like, I'll give you anything in the store and try to bribe him. And they always got disgusted and went for Mary or Laura and could never stand to have anything to do with Nellie. No boy could stand her for more than one date. And then suddenly, you're getting married. I'm like, where are we going to find this guy? But it was brilliant because it was the whole Percival episode, and it really was a whole, like, send-up parody of, Taming of the Shrew, because here was this short little Jewish guy who comes in to teach me how to run the restaurant, and he won't take any of my crap, basically, and because he held her accountable. He treated her like a person, said, no, I'm going to hold you accountable for your actions and treat you with respect, but you're not going to do this, and she loved this, and I wind up falling madly in love, and it worked out, but, oh, it's adorable.
Oh, so you were never really jealous of Laura getting Dean Butler, Monzo.
Love picking on poor Dean Butler. Dean Butler, nicest person just ever, just sweetest guy, was El Monzo. But yes, that was the funny thing is here, Melissa, she always liked more the dark-haired, exotic guy. She's like, I'm getting married, but I got this blonde guy, El Monzo. So neither of us ever had romantic designs on El Monzo and Dean Butler, the poor guy. We tended to pick on him and make fun of him. We still do. He's fabulous, though. He's got a documentary out he's doing about the music of Charles Ingalls, the whole thing called Pause Fiddle. So, yes, he's quite brilliant, but it's always fun to pick on El Monzo.
Oh, fun. Now, did I read in your book that, speaking of a romantic interest, weren't you girls, or was it just you or somebody, flirty with, like, the stagehands?
Yeah, it was me. I've always, you know, had a thing for the working blue-collar type. You know, give me a guy in a wife-beater T-shirt with a cigarette behind his ear and a toothpick in his mouth. You know, this is the kind of guy I like. And here were the grips, and they were all good. It's nice Italian-American guys with the muscles and working away out on location with their shirts off half the time and up ladders. And, you know, they were very muscular guys. And I was like, you know, sure, you had actors who were really cute who guested on the show, but they were often these skinny little actor guys, and here were these big, muscular, swarthy dudes on ladders. I liked the crew. I did. I flirted shamelessly with the crew growing up.
And I can just picture you with your Nellie Olson wig and petticoats.
Right. And the petticoats and the wig. Hi!
Oh, that's so funny. Share one of your favorite memories with us.
Oh, well, you know, I have to tell you, it's like I have so many, because 7 years, it was hysterical. I mean, hence why I had to write a book. I had so much fun on that thing. One of my favorite things is that episode, the one where I go down the hill in the wheelchair. It's the one, Bunny, where Laura and I fight over that horse. And, of course, I get thrown, and then I pretend that I'm crippled. And it was absolutely insane, because at the end of the show, she shoves me down the hill in the 1800s wheelchair. But when we did that, I had an actual broken arm. I had broken my arm skateboarding the week before. So I had a real broken arm, but I'm pretending I can't move my legs. But I have a cast, and we've put like an 1800s cast over my real cast. And then I'm in this chair, and it's not any kind of special equipment. People always think that there's more special effects involved in show business, and there really is. And a little house, there was no special effects. Everything was very real. It really was an antique wheelchair. It's very rickety.
Oh.
There were no seat belts, no safety equipment of any kind. They didn't make me do the big hill. They had the stunt girl for that. So they had me go partway down the hill, and then they take me to this other hill so they can get a nice long shot of me falling down the hill. And they put me in the chair, and they go, okay, go, and just shoot this thing down the hill. And the camera, now the camera's on a track. They're safe. They're not going anywhere. They've got boards and all track for the camera and four guys steering it. Nobody's steering me. Shooting down the hill, and the thing's rattling so hard, I can feel my teeth coming loose in my head. And at one point, they said, well, maybe we should have a rope on it so it does, not for me, but so the chair didn't hit the camera and hurt the cameraman. So they had a rope to sort of keep it from shooting off towards the camera. And at one point, one of the guys said, oh, let's tell her the rope broke. And they were hoping to make me scream more, but then they realized I was already screaming continuously at the top of my lungs.
I remember.
Because I thought I was going to fall out of this thing. That's why I'm screaming bloody murder in that chair. I'm bouncing around, and I can't hang on because one of my arms is literally broken. And I thought, I'm going to fall out of this thing and break the other arm. So, yes, the moment in the wheelchair is actual fear. It's live.
Oh, my gosh. Now, was that scarier to you than when they had you in the water? At least you had got to wear wetsuits.
The wetsuits went now. That was good. I did think we were going to drown at one point because they took a fire hose, really, and pumped water, fire hose with a nozzle off, and hit Melissa and I in the face, so it looked like we're getting hit in the rapids. We nearly drowned. But they put us in wetsuits so we wouldn't drown in the river because it was very cold, and you could sink very easily. And so they had the flotation device, and it kept you from your chest seizing up. But it was okay. We only had to, you know, swim one little part. We managed. The only problem is, have you ever worn a diving wetsuit for any long period of time?
It gets hot, doesn't it?
It gets hot, and you're stuck in it. We're in the river, and we realize that we have to go to the bathroom. Melissa says, I got to pee. I said, I got to pee, too. So we asked, we said, well, we'd like to go to the restroom. They said, well, the bathrooms are way up the hill. We're out in the middle of nowhere. We're up in Northern California shooting this. They said, we'd have to put you in a car, drive you all the way to the bathroom, get you out of the costumes and the petticoats, out of the wetsuit, have you take a pee, get back into the wetsuit, get back into the costumes, and drive you back down the hill. This is going to take forever. You guys are going to have to hold it till lunch. So with two of us standing trying to hold it, and finally, Melissa just turns to me with this look on her face, and I said, oh, please tell me you did not do what I think you just did. And she says, do it, it'll keep you warm. So, yes, when you watch the Camp Out episode where Laura and Ellie fall in the river, we're peeing in those wetsuits.
Oh, my gosh, funny.
And it does work. You know, it does keep you warm. It actually does.
Did Michael Landon really not wear underwear on the set?
It's true. I mean, yeah, okay, in the 70s, it was one thing running around in his skin-tight jeans, you know, in his daily life with the no underwear and the open shirt. But it was quite disconcerting in the Paul Ingalls clothes. But he realized, I mean, they actually did a survey, and they knew that our biggest group of viewers were women in their 40s and up. I mean, you guys were kids when you saw the show, but it was your moms who were all tuning in. And they knew this, and they knew women love to watch a show. And we still get all the moms who are all watching on DVD. So his shirt came off, like, every episode, and the pants stayed tight. And if you watch the show, watch some time when Pa's, like, running across a field. The man has no underwear on under this.
Tell us about what it was like behind the scenes. Like, what was a day-to-day like being there?
Well, it was really fun. I mean, a lot of work, because we filmed a lot on location. We went out to Simi for the outdoor scenes, and we got Northern California, and we went out to Arizona. So you'd have to get there really insanely early. I mean, a 4 a.m. call, 5 a.m. call was completely normal. I remember when they got more efficient as the year rolled on, and we were really excited that we didn't have to come to work till 7 a.m. That was like sleeping in. It's like, ooh, 7 a.m. call, awesome. You get there, and it was always either freezing cold or insanely hot. I fainted at least once every summer from the heat. And you get there, and you had to do the makeup and the hair, which took forever with the wig. And then I had to get in the clothes, which included my fabulous little high-button boots and my things. I had the petticoat and a million hooks and eyes. So I actually had to have my aunt help me get dressed. It was sort of like being in the 1800s. I had to have a dresser. And then, you know, you get down to the set, and we were always on the lookout for food. On really cold days, they'd have chili. On the other days, there was donuts. So there's always, like, lots of snacks and stuff. But it was constant struggle to either not freeze to death or not die of heat prostration. And it never failed that if we were bundled up in those big costumes with the coats, we were filming in the summer. And we were filming the summer episodes in the winter and freezing to death. So it was mostly a lot of physical hard work. But working there was fun because Michael Landon had just the most wonderfully warped sense of humor. I mean, you have to remember, this is the guy who got famous in the movie I Was a Teenage Werewolf. And
right.
He never recovered. Do you know Michael Landon's birthday was on Halloween?
Oh, my.
October 31st. And he would have made Halloween a national holiday if he could have. He just loved any excuse to dress up, practical jokes, anything, scare people, anything he could do. So even though you had this really serious show with all these episodes where everybody cries, we were laughing most of the time. The hardest thing about doing Little House was to stop laughing and not crack up and break up and go back to the scene and not laugh during the takes.
Tell
you have to, like, you know, okay, everybody, straight face. Try to keep a straight face.
tell us about your involvement with HIV and AIDS.
Well, Percival, when I, you know, Nellie got married, the actor Steve Tracy, who played Percival on the show, wonderful, wonderful guy, he died of AIDS in 1986. And it's hard to fathom now how hard things were back in 86. It seems like it wasn't that long ago, but there were no drugs or treatments as we know them today. People were absolutely terrified. They thought you could get AIDS off the doorknob. I mean, it was completely insane compared to now. And he went public with his AIDS diagnosis, told everyone he had AIDS, and for someone who'd just been on a big hit series, that was a really big deal. I mean, Rock Hudson was still trying to tell people he didn't have AIDS. So he went public, and I was trying to help him, and he was very lucky. Steve, when he was sick, his mom and his sister flew out from Florida and took care of him. They're really nice people. But I started finding all of these other people with AIDS whose mothers didn't come to visit them, who didn't stand by them, who had no friends, who didn't have health insurance, had nothing. And so I started volunteering at AIDS Project Los Angeles to help people living with AIDS and HIV, and I wound up working at Tuesday's Child, helping families with children with AIDS and helping babies with AIDS and their families. And it was really hard because so many people just had, I mean, there weren't hardly any of the services we take for granted now for people who were sick then, and it was pretty rough, but I think I helped a lot of people, and then I'm still doing stuff. There's still small agencies around the country that are helping people living with HIV in their local communities, and I fly out around the country to little places and doing fundraisers for these people all the time. And it scares me now that we still have it, that it's, you know, 2012 and people are still getting infected. It's completely crazy. There's still no cure, still no vaccine, but, you know, I feel that over the last 30 years I've at least made a dent. I've at least tried to educate people and help people out.
Well, we applaud you for that.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we need to wrap now. We
would love to. Oh, God, it's 7:30. Oi!
Would you join us again on Chit Chat Cafe Live?
I most certainly would. I love your accent, too. I love the little Jersey accent. I heard that.
Oh,
we'd
love to have
you.
And
that was so cute.
We'd love to have you join us again.
Yes, you're delightful.
Oh, thank you. Well, and you know, everyone, you've given them my website, and they can also, I got to go by protect.org and see the place, the charity. I'm doing stuff now for abused kids.
Protect.org.
Really protect.org. We're trying to pass laws. Well, actually, we're succeeding. We pass a lot of laws in states, and we do stuff in Washington as well to try to help change the laws to make it much, much better for abused kids, because there's all these insane loopholes in the law and people getting away with stuff they shouldn't be getting away with, and we're trying to fix that.
All right, protect.org. We'll put that on our website.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, good. Well, you're fabulous. Hey, before we go, could you just one more time say country girls?
For you, yes. Country girls.
Oh, I love it.
The best one was in the schoolroom. Country girls don't even know what a blackboard is. That was funny. That was funny when my New York Queens accent kind of kicked in during that.
Well, would you please join us again? We have more to
talk about. Absolutely. You guys are awesome.
Thank you, Allison.
So much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Lisa, I can't believe I just got to speak to one of my little idols. I just loved
it. You love that show.
I did. Every episode.
That's why I was with the Brady Bunch. But I can't get anybody from the Brady Bunch to come on our show. Nobody wants to, everybody answers my emails.
Yeah, open invitation. Marsha, Brady, Greg, Peter, Jan, Alice.
I know.
Anyone, join us. It's fun.
Anyway, we're going to take a quick commercial break. I'm going to thank our sponsors, Laura Geller Cosmetics, Intimacy Bras, and St. Croix Orthopedics. We'll see you back in a minute with Maggie Hale.
Now back to Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We have a really cool guest coming up, and I'm really interested in what she's involved with. Her name is, it's Maggie, right? Maggie
right.
Hale. That's cute. I like that name, Maggie. Very cute. She's the founder of Slimmer Silhouette In-Home Body Sculpting System. I need that, boy. Woo! Her journey from an abused, overweight teen to a successful businesswoman and creator of the Slimmer Silhouette. Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you so much for having me on.
This is an honor to have you on. Tell us about Slimmer Silhouette. What is it?
Well, it's a product that it just does amazing things. It's very healthy. I actually had a medical facility prior, and we catered to hospice. And in that time, I was with a biochemist. We created a natural product that would help with wounds when patients would come from other places with sores, like the cubitus ulcers, which are known as bed sores, and things like and skin tears. And we ended up having a couple patients that outlived their funds, and so we decided to keep them instead of putting them in a county home. We opened up a spa. We did wraps from other companies, and one day we tried this wound product and got amazing results. So it actually helps tighten the skin. It helps with pulling out impurities, and it helps infuse minerals in the body. It helps with cellulite, diminishing cellulite, so it's a great product.
Could anybody use it? I mean, any age or?
Well, it is good. It is fine for any age. But it actually, for children, if they're under the age of, guardianship, usually 18 or under, yeah, we like the parent to be involved, but either way, it's that very healthy.
Does it help, no matter how much weight you have to lose?
Well, it actually helps even if you don't have weight to lose, to be honest. But yes, it works as a tool. So let's say that somebody has to lose whatever they want to lose. Let's say they lose 5 pounds or 10 pounds, and they're using our product along the journey. Then they can look like they lost maybe, anywhere from 15 to 20, 25 pounds. And so that keeps them motivated to keep on track. Plus, it also helps their skin catch up as they lose so that they don't have saggy skin at the end of the game. And we've already done over 50,000 treatments, so it's pretty fun.
Wow. You write that growing up, I had very few joys, Barbie dolls, Disneyland, and ice cream. Tell us about those days.
Oh, those were rough days. Well, when I was five, when I was a really young child, my father was an extremely violent man, and my mother got custody of us. And when I was five, he came into our home and kidnapped the three of us, myself and my two brothers. And he took us out of spite rather than out of the wanting the children. He just didn't want our mother to have us. And she was a very young mother. So by the time she was 19, or she actually had she had three children. So we were with him for quite a while, and he was an incredibly abusive man, and it was just a rough time. And so I sat every day, which is the unfortunate thing, I sat every day contemplating and thinking about how to commit suicide and what the best way to do this was. It was sad. But the thing about it is that I had that pain inside me, and I didn't know how to deal with it. And so that's what happens with these teens, is they sit and, they sit and have this pain, and they turn to drugs or alcohol or suicide. And that's why we ended up taking the product out of the spa and into the world market. That's a very close subject for me.
And so. You described that your mom and dad were divorced, and your dad broke every bone in your mother's body?
Oh, he broke her ribs, pretty much. I mean, he broke quite a few of her bones. Yeah.
Aww. But,
Actually, back in the 60s, which is the thing, I mean, one time he actually broke her ribs in front of two police officers.
Mm.
Yeah, they didn't do very much back then. If you killed your wife, they did. But if you beat your wife and broke her bones, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, my mother would go to the hospital thinking that they were going to arrest him, and he'd be waiting at the hospital when she got there. Can you imagine the stress of just having your ribs broken, and you get to the hospital, and there's a man that just did all the things he did to you.
So you turned to food for comfort.
I did. It became my safety net. It became my protection. And there was a lot of issues with my father. He was a man who also liked young girls, but the weight protected me. So it was an odd protection for me. But I feel very fortunate because even though I went through all this abuse as a kid, I feel like it was part of my journey. I know that my hurt is now healing, and that's what the process is about. It's about taking that and taking it in and taking it out and helping others with something that you can comprehend and understand. And it's difficult to help people if you don't really understand or feel it. So that's why I feel like I went through it for whatever reason I went through it, if I can help others not go through it.
You also, it was very sad about you were in fifth grade and you had a right, you were, said you were fatter than ever, and you had a, you were taking a math test and your pencil broke and you had to walk across the room. Tell us about that day.
I was just so insecure and so, oh gosh, I was so afraid of everything as a kid. I just felt, I was pretty beaten down. I was abused in so many different ways. And so I actually literally wouldn't, I didn't even want to get up and sharpen my pencil because I didn't want people to look at me. Mm-hmm. I remember falling one time in the hallway and everybody gathered around me. I broke out in hives. I was just extremely introverted and I just didn't have any self-esteem. I didn't have any belief that I had any value or contribution to give to the world. And when that changed for me, my life changed. And that's why this is so important to me, to be able to help other people get that perspective that we all have contribution and value to give to this world.
Hmm.
There's a lot of things I don't even say. It was a rough time, but you know what? I don't live back there, but at the same time, if I can take that time and turn it out and help people understand what it's like to go through that and to realize that we all have value, then I'll pull it out as much as I need to.
Did you have any friends to talk to during that time? Any good girlfriends or anybody you could confide in, a teacher or...
Well, I tried to talk to some teachers. My father was touching my friends. You know, I was afraid to bring friends home. I had friends that I would bring home and it would turn into something different. So I got to the point where I was pretty much isolated for a long time until I moved out at 15 and then my world changed. So that's when things started coming together for me. I'm glad I moved out. It really saved my life in a lot of ways.
At 15, at least I was pretty young to be able to, you started a new life.
Yeah, I thought I was all grown up. I was pretty convinced I was grown up at 15 years old. I couldn't understand why every time I'd go over to someone's house for dinner, they'd, you know, want to adopt me. I was very confused by that. I thought I was a grown adult at 15 years old.
Well, I'm Nancy, and I just love your website. It's so beautiful, all the colors, and it's beautiful. In that website, you mentioned that after all this, you moved to California and started college, and you write about finding your skinny spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Describe that spirit to all of us.
Well, it's about knowing that you have value. It's about knowing you don't have to be fat. I mean, you don't have to be skinny to be perfect. And the point is that I actually, I feel good about myself. I'm not even all the way there yet. I still have weight to lose, but I've lost a lot in my journey. And the point is, you need to love yourself where you're at and work from there. And a lot of people are trying to get to a certain point before they love themselves or before they think that they're happy. And it really starts inside right now. It's that turning point when you start to realize different things about, it's in your mind. And it's where you're at right now that people need to be. So that's basically the skinny spirit, finding your happy place right now rather than waiting until you're there.
Exactly. And not looking back, except knowing that I'm moving forward.
Right.
Well, you also write about your life mission. Could you explain that to others, especially for teens?
Okay. Well, we were using our product in our spa, and it was going really popular. Well, I mean, it was extremely popular, and my father passed away in 2007, and that's when I started looking at the rate of teenage suicide. I didn't really deal with it a lot, you know, because I had gone past it in lots of ways, but I kind of buried a lot of my emotions. But when he passed away, those emotions came up to surface. And I started looking into and researching, and the last study that I actually saw was about 800,000 kids a year try to commit suicide. So my mind went, well, what can I do? How can I create something that would empower and you know, do the things that I want to do? And I knew that would take a lot of money. So I decided that I already had a great product, and I decided to take it out to the world market, which is what we've been working on. So it's chicken and the egg kind of thing. So I wanted to take that out to the market, and then I started working on healthyteens.org, which we're still in the process of doing. And once we get this completed all the way, basically there are life coaches we've got lined up, food coaches, celebrity photographers that will take their pictures in the very beginning where they look beautiful now rather than frumpy now and beautiful later. We want them to be empowered right away. We've also got skills tests that we'll be doing where we'll be able to establish their skills and talents and strengths early on. And in some cases, we'll be able to put them with mentors if there's certain areas that they're interested in. we want to empower them from the get-go and go from there. We're also going to be subcontracting a suicide hotline so that we kind of can assess where they're at. So there's counselors. There's a variety of professionals that will be working with us that will be working with these teens. And basically, if I can redirect at least 1 million kids in the next 2 years, that's my goal.
Well, we applaud you. That is amazing. And you're just the right person to help with that, especially, you know, with your background. You did try to kill yourself a few times, and thank goodness your brother was able to come into the room that one time.
Yeah, actually, I did actually, later on, even after that, I actually did try to commit suicide, and I was renting an apartment. And I was very fortunate that my landlord actually came into my place just on an intuition. I never called anybody, and I woke up 4 days later in the ICU. And so I'm grateful that I'm here. I have two beautiful grown daughters now. I have a little grandson who's 3 years old this month. They wouldn't be here if I had succeeded. And so nobody knows. You know, they think that there's no light at the end of the tunnel, but I'm here to say there really is. There is a light. You just have to hang on, and you have to keep yourself from getting close to the edge. And so after that happened, I realized I just had to always, no matter how tough things got, I had to keep myself from getting close to the edge, and I had to realize I had to focus on my strengths rather than my weaknesses. And so that's what I started doing, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
So right now, if we had a teen on the line with us right now, other than that, what would you tell her if she was in the same desperate situation?
Well, I mean, I need to know a little bit more about her, but I would basically let her, we'd have to talk and find out, What is her situation? Is she being bullied? Is it a problem at home? Is it the parents? Is it herself bullying herself? You know, there's a lot more to it than just basically talking to them, because if they get to a certain point, unfortunately, there's really nothing you can say to get someone to turn around. That's why, I mean, that's my belief, is that they get to a certain point, it's hard to just pat them on the back and say, I'm here for you. It's better to find where the weaknesses are and work from there and help them find their contribution and value point. Because we all have it. And look at when they had this program opened where they were dropping kids off by the carload for a period of time. I think it was in North Nebraska or somewhere. Do you remember that? Where they opened it up to all ages. Well, they closed it down to infant ages again, but at that point they were letting people drop off kids at all ages. And one man brought 8 kids. They were dropping the kids off by the carload. And so the sad thing is they were dropping these kids off because they didn't want them anymore. But what's worse is that when they're in the home of these parents who don't want them, and they're stuck in the home with those parents. So there's just so many pieces to it. And I wish I could just say something that would turn them around, but I don't feel it's that simple. There's so much more to it, and that's why this program is really important to me, and to do it right, because we have to work in all those areas to, you know, to have success.
Exactly. Well, would you also be able to tell us about how you help teens blossom from the inside out, especially with your healthyteens.org?
Well, this is still in a work in progress. You know, I need to tell you that it's still a work in progress. Because Slumber Silhouette is funding this program, and it's in a work in progress. But basically, when we assess their skills and we help them find their strengths, because they may not fit into that category, say in high school, they may not be a good basketball player, a football player, or they may not be, you know, great academically. So we have to find where their skill sets are and then find their interests at the same time. So there's a few steps that would be involved. And then a lot of them have eating disorders, whether it be overeating or undereating. And so that's why food coaches are really valuable, to be working with food coaches and life coaches, personal trainers, counselors. You know, there's a plethora of different professionals that will be working with these individuals. And so when we work with them to develop from the inside out, they blossom on the outside at the same time. And that's, once we redirect that negative self-talk and programming that's going over and over and over in their head, that's where it begins. A lot of people think it's just a simple counseling or a simple getting one or two things for them, but it's really what they think about themselves. I think you probably read about how I was in college, and I was convinced that I was borderline, you know, I just really thought that I was way below average in intelligence. Well, that's from the child abuse that I went through. Well, I was in college, and I took my final exam, and I was sure I flunked it, and I got the highest score. Well, it was that moment that I realized, oh, my gosh, my father lied to me, and I believed that for so many years. Well, once I believed the opposite, I was able to go on and do amazing things with my brain and with my talents. So it's all to these kids. Once they start to believe in themselves and believe their value and find their value, find their voice, that's where they blossom. That's where they go. And that's what this is about.
Well, that is just amazing. And also, you even help them with skin, beauty, fashion, everything they need to help them improve their self-image.
We're lining up image consultants and estheticians and so on. So it's a big process right now. We've got a lot of work ahead of us before we get to the where I'm really excited and happy about. But this is the stepping points right now.
Well, that's great. Well, we would like to jump back and talk about your premier spa quality home body wraps. Our listeners are very interested in finding out more about this. We have your website, your link on our website, but explain some of the what's involved with it. It's a kit that they can use at home, correct?
Yes, there's a couple different programs. There's programs for spas and salons. We're getting contacted from all over the country who want to carry our product. They can either sell it at the spa, or they can do the treatment there and charge whatever they want. But when people go to get a body wrap of sorts, typically what they do is the washcloth wraps, where they're the sweat, like a clay, a mud, a seaweed, herbal, saran wrap. Those smother the pores and they cause it to sweat. Now, this is not the same thing. So there's no sweat process in this. This is actually minerals that seep into the pores. They actually help the body, you know, get the minerals that we need because we aren't getting minerals anymore. And a lot of people are thinking about vitamins, but they're not thinking about minerals, and they need those as well to help digest food properly and a lot of other things that affects the body with the lack of minerals. And so when it does that, it helps pull out some of the impurities. So that helps with some cellulite diminishing, and it helps with the skin tightening up as you lose. And, you know, people can use it as a tool. And then there's a lot of celebrities and other people who use it that are nice. They have a great shape. They're in pretty much at the way they want to be. They just do it either to tighten the skin or get the minerals or the detox or to help the cellulite. So there's a lot of reasons why people would use this product. And so you can use it at home if you want to, and there's enough for 12 in the full kit, 12 full body treatments. And spas charge anywhere from $150 to $350 for one of these, so you're getting them at a lot better price. Comes out to $299 for 12 of these, and it's at your own convenience because a lot of professionals don't have time to go during the regular day. And also, a lot of people don't want to pay full price. So this is how it's set up.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And we have a link on our Chit Chat Cafe Live website to all of our listeners. You can click on that link and order directly from Maggie Hale. Her Slim Silhouettes website is listed right there. So, Maggie, would you join us again on Chit Chat Cafe Live sometime?
I would love to. Thank you so much. Please get me back when we're all really rolling on the nonprofit, because that's really exciting to me.
And what we'll also do, we'll make sure that we have that link posted as well so people can find you there.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you for coming. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. That's interesting.
Oh, you know, I just am so amazed that she was able to pull herself out of all of that and now a successful businesswoman.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Yep.
I want to talk, before we go off, I want to talk about JFK's mistress. What do you think about all this?
Well, Lisa, you know, first of all, how about the other night? Lisa and I were watching Rock Central
yeah,
on NBC.
Last night.
And we're on Facebook back and forth talking. We can't believe it. What's her name? Mimi Alford.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who wrote the book.
Like, why did she wait till now? Like, why is she doing that? Like, I'm the first one that wants to read it. I mean, I want to hear all about it. But, however, I think she was saying things that she really didn't need to talk about. Did she really need to talk about the president telling her to give a BJ to his assistant? I mean, I don't think we really needed to know that. Did she need, like, I felt bad for Caroline. Like, why is she bringing all this up now? I mean, the man's been dead for 50 years, you know? It's like, I don't know.
Well, I know, and to think that she was a press intern when she was 19, involved with President Kennedy, when he was 45, she said, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I personally don't know why she just didn't say no.
Well, I mean, I could see the allure of that. You know, you're a young girl and the sexy president, good-looking president, you know. I could see that. I could see why she would have done it. Absolutely. I can. But to talk about it 50 years later, I think she just wants to, I don't know, she has to free herself. Come on, cut me a break. After 50 years, you need to free yourself? And I just felt bad for Caroline. You know, did she need to hear more about her dad? Did she need to know that her dad was, like, that part was not necessary. And then she wanted, for everybody that didn't hear, she also wanted, President Kennedy wanted her to give oral sex to Ted Kennedy. She said no to that. She didn't do that. But, like, why is she saying all that? There's no reason for it.
And especially the pregnancy scare. How about that?
Right, she had a pregnancy scare. Yep. It's crazy. But, like, why do people have to know all her business like that? I mean, she just wants to sell books. But even when you hear everybody interviewing her, they keep saying alleged mistress. Nobody's coming out and right saying they really 100% believe her.
Exactly. Well, we are trying to get her as our guest on Chitchat Live. Lisa, won't that be interesting?
I hope. Let's try. Let's see. We're going to do our best.
But wonderful show tonight. So for all of you listening, if you have an opinion, find us on Facebook and Twitter and let us know what you think about the mistress idea.
Yep. Yep.
Well, we're thanking all of our guests tonight. We're especially thanking our sponsors, St. Croix Orthopedics, Laura Geller Makeup and Intimacy Bras. Corey King is a fabulous producer. We're highly recommending everyone to enjoy the Corey King Show every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. on Artist First.
And don't forget to listen to our archives. Just go to our webpage, scroll down to the date you'd like to listen. Maybe listen to Davy Jones or Dr. Jennifer Berman, or we've had Food Network stars. We've had some really cool people. Just click on the date, and you can listen and enjoy. And we'd like to thank our guests tonight, Allison Eng, how do you pronounce it? Arngrim. I can't talk. And Maggie Hale. We appreciate them being guests on our show. And I'd like to leave you with a fun quote tonight. There are two times in life when you should keep your mouth shut. It's when you're angry and when you are swimming. Good night, everybody. See you next week.
Good night.